Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Franklin Radio's presentation of a priest, a minister, and a rabbi walking to a radio station. We hope to be actually walking into the radio station soon. I'm Jay Horrigan, and as always, I'm lucky enough to be here with Dr. Pandora Carlucci. How are you, Pandora?
I'm very fine, Jay. I'm sorry for that. It's a little warm, but doing okay. And yourself?
I'm doing great. We got thrown right into summer a couple of weeks ago. Memorial Day weekend, it was 40 degrees, and this past weekend, it was 90. Quite a change we've been experiencing, which is something we've been experiencing everywhere. The change in the COVID policies of the state of Massachusetts, locally, in the town. And, you know, that's probably my initial question for the people we have here. Our panel, as always, a stellar panel. We'll start with Rabbi Tom. How about how are things going with your synagogue and all the things that you do? How much in-person stuff are you doing, et cetera, et cetera?
So things are good. Things are good. You know, I mean, there's all the standard things of life, the good, the joys and the sorrows that happen. But they're starting to feel more like standard parts of life rather than, you know, this sort of exceptional COVID overlay. We have had some services where we've had people in person, you know, particular groups. For instance, our leadership was installed and many of them came in person. We have not yet open to the larger community, but we have a group that's a task force that's working on it. They're going to present a recommendation to our board at the end of the month, and I would be awfully surprised if we weren't pretty open pretty soon.
Oh, that's so exciting to hear. Reverend Kathy, how about you? Are you folks doing the same thing, starting to transition back to whatever this normal is going to be going forward?
Yeah, we're transitioning. We're trying to do it slowly, kind of step by step. So we are blessed to have a lovely shady lawn area in front of the church. And so we're taking advantage of that and worshiping outdoors during the summer. We are inviting vaccinated people to unmask and encouraging unvaccinated people to stay masked. We are doing congregational singing again, which is exciting. We're starting to do some meetings in person. In fact, the church school got together and had a little walk and ate popsicles and played games outside. And that was kind of their end of year celebration. And we're shooting for all of that being indoors in September, assuming that the numbers continue to go the way they're going. So
awesome. I do have to ask, because I saw that awesome video that you posted. Did you bring people from your congregation together when you were digging that hole outside of the house with the big auger and everything?
I've been putting up a horse fence at my house, and it is actually done except for building the gate. So I'm quite proud of it.
Jeez, I saw
you're
that.
You're referring to a Facebook post, yeah.
Yes, it was amazing. And my first comment to myself was, thankfully, that's Reverend Kathy and not me trying to do it. So good for you. That was awesome. And Reverend Eric, how about with you folks? How are things going?
Thanks, Jay. Yeah, we're doing okay, too. At First Universalist Society in Franklin, we're on a slow ramp up to our grand reopening of the building on September 12th. And some of that ramping up has been really pretty neat. We're on retreat up in Saco, Maine, or for our annual church retreat in mid-May. And so we had a hybrid worship service from their outdoor chapel that went smoothly. And then last Sunday was the first time that we had a hybrid service indoors for the church. And that was for what we call bridging. It's kind of like a baccalaureate service for seniors graduating from high school. And so the eight seniors and their families and the worship team were in the building and leading the service live, and a hybrid interactive service for the vast majority of the congregation that were Zooming in. And it went pretty smoothly. And so we're going to be experimenting with that, with like specifically invited folks Sunday to Sunday over the next couple of months. If the vaccination or vaccination rates and the infection rates and all that continue in the direction they're currently going, we may have a general open door policy for Sunday mornings by the last Sunday in July, but really focused on a grand reopening in September. The culture we're creating is very much as Kathy described for her congregation. We encourage masking and social distancing for all people. We require masks of anyone that's not fully vaccinated, and we invite people who are fully vaccinated to remove their masks. So that's sort of how things are going on our end.
It sounds like all three of you kind of have similar approaches, and I'm sure part of that comes out of, I know the three of you talk all the time, and it's a similar approach. You're starting to see, you know, a lot of stores, wherever you may go, the encouragement of masks for non-vaccinated people. Have you found any challenges or anything with that, Reverend Eric?
Well, I just want to add in there that yes, and mostly it's like the unfamiliarity of the situation and kind of getting used to it again. But we had the Interfaith Council in Franklin had a really nice taste of that just that last week. We met in person as a council outdoors for the first time since the pandemic started. And, you know, throughout the meeting went really well. Reverend Kathy's our chair, so it always goes smoothly. But I just found myself kind of, you know, just in awe of the fact that this was happening at all at various points during the meeting, which was kind of neat. And so, yeah, I think we're all sort of dipping toes into what it's like to be back in person with people that we know and people that we don't. And it's kind of neat.
The interesting, I noticed, I'm sorry, Rabbi, that people are without masks saying hello. I'm not sure who everyone is. I don't, for a year and a half, we've seen their face covers. Rabbi, you were about to say something.
I was just going to say that I think one of the fascinating things is watching the mix between intellect and emotion on this. Because, you know, the intellect takes you to whatever places it does about, you know, exactly whether, you know, how much distancing is and isn't needed and all of these things. And emotions kick in, and they kick in on both sides. There are the people who, as you described it, Jay, that feel like they're on spring break and that, you know, it's all done. This is over. We're done with it. And I'm finished. And other people who are feeling, I'm really hesitant to take that next step. And both those, there's the interplay between either of those and scientific guidance is not 100%. There's, you know, some of it are just our people are where they are emotionally, and that needs to be respected and cared for and understood as we continue to make judgments about health and safety.
Yeah, I totally agree. Reverend Kathy, let me ask you, Rabbi Tom brings up a great point. There's a difference from the emotional point over to the scientific point, and there's a ton of room in between left almost to people's different interpretation. How are you folks, because people feel differently. We've all got groups of friends and we have friends on each end, and we have friends in the middle. How are you dealing with it personally and also within your congregation?
Well, I think the most important thing as a leader of a congregation, I feel it's my responsibility to keep people safe. And we do have people who are not vaccinated, especially those under 12 years of age, as well as some folks who just aren't ready to do that yet, or, you know, for whatever reason they can't. So those are the people I want to make sure don't come in contact with each other in an unsafe way. That's what I feel is my responsibility. Those of us who are vaccinated are pretty safe. And, you know, I think the public health people are pretty clear now that we're not going to transmit anything to anyone. So, you know, personally, I feel pretty safe going out. I even went to a movie the other day. Oh, my goodness. And I ate popcorn,
wow,
too.
Oh, wow.
It was a really bad movie, but I loved being there.
You were in a movie theater, really. The movie's a secondary part of it, yeah.
Right, right. So, you know, personally, I feel pretty safe. And in my role as a hospice chaplain, I go into a lot of facilities and not feeling any anxiety about that. But I do want to keep the congregation safe.
Absolutely. It's a challenge, you know, especially with the younger people, because you have some that are vaccinated, some that aren't, and for a variety of reasons. And it's, you know, we all remember back when we were 16 years old, there was nothing that could hurt us, you know, so there is, you know, a little concern there and probably a need to maybe educate a little bit more. Now, we've covered our updates here. That's not our topic for today. And our topic is so interesting, but it's so timely, and it's something that absolutely needs to be addressed. And that's why Dr. Pandora Carlucci is in charge of it. So I'm going to hand this over to Pandora as she takes us forward in our journey today. Pandora?
Well, thank you, Jay. I have to say, I truly enjoyed the first part of the discussion, because there are so many mixed emotions that we all have in efforts to stay safe, in efforts to be non-judgmental about the decisions of others, and keep our family and friends safe, and all the different situations that encompass us in our daily lives. So it was nice to get a sense of what's happening in the congregations across our community. And then, as Jay was alluding, we always have a focus topic for discussion. And the topic for this morning is dealing with hatred. When the topic first came across my desk, I thought to myself, you know, this is such a serious subject. We watch the news, we see hatred played out. Sometimes it's very obvious in terms of crowds of people, in terms of words spoken. And at other times, it's very just below the surface, and it's equally as harmful and full of hate. And it's frightening to see. And Reverend Eric, I thought that I would begin with you as you work with your congregation, and you know, we're all living in the same community, and we watch the news and we read the papers and we read the electronic media. How is this being experienced by your congregation, these forms of hate and intolerance? What questions are being raised, and how are you responding?
Thanks, Pandora. Yeah, so I want to start by saying that I think for the vast majority of the congregation that I serve, the angle that's most important to take is around privilege. And I'll speak for myself in particular, that that I am not, I don't feel as though I'm often a target of hate or intolerance. And I didn't earn that. That's something that comes with skin color, with gender, with education, unearned, but just a reality of how things are in the society that we live in. And I think that's the case for many people in my congregation. However, there are experiences of hate and intolerance that my folks experience because of their ethnicities and race, because of their sexual orientation, because of their gender identities, and in a kind of a smaller way, but you know, in a way that matters. Unitarian Universalism is a quite a minority religion in our country and in our town, although our history in Franklin is, you know, almost, you know, more than 150 years. I think the lack of understanding sometimes leads to a kind of an intolerance because of difference that can be a challenge. But I really want to say that that most folks in my congregation, starting with me, need to address this question more from the ways that we've internalized depression, that we're a part of the problem, and to get better. So that's the starting place for me.
I think that many of us do come from a place of privilege where we are not singled out, but we do have a role to play when we see it happening, whether it's obvious or just below the surface, because hatred is a learned emotion. It is not part of us when we are born. It is taught. We need to teach tolerance and understanding. Reverend Kathy, when we look at what is happening and we do look at teaching tolerance and understanding and modeling this in our spoken word and in our actions, how do we share this with our congregation, with the community, when faced with very obvious hatred that happens in the world?
Well, I agree with Reverend Eric that most of my congregation has a lot of privilege, but a few of them experience racism and xenophobia. Personally, I'm most vulnerable to hate speech as a lesbian, though I have to say that I've been very fortunate in not experiencing a lot of that aimed at me personally, and things have certainly improved since I came out 36 years ago. When I was a teacher in Denver in the 80s, other LGBT teachers told me about police taking down license plate numbers at gay bars and firing the teachers who were there. And I remember being just a little bit fearful for my life, marching in pride parades or other kinds of political demonstrations. But then when I was first ordained in the year 2000, it was very difficult for me to find a church, especially in the suburbs. And that was in the San Francisco Bay Area. I've never hidden who I am, but I do sometimes choose to be a little less forthcoming than at other times. And so I guess for me, that's part of how I model for the congregation is just trying to be who I am. But I think maybe sometimes they're a few steps ahead of me.
Thank you for speaking so personally and from the heart. You know, sometimes people don't know the whole story. And as I listen to you, because I've only met you in the past few years, I look back and think, what was life like 36 years ago as you were telling your story, and how difficult it was to be honest to yourself and to share that, as you said, as you came out 36 years ago.
That makes me feel old just to say that.
But don't they always say age is relative? And it's great to look at what the 36 years has combined. You know, that is strength and that is energy. And you bring a personal voice to the subject, not just for our conversation here, but for your congregation. They must give you strength back in your leadership role there.
Absolutely. I was going to share this a little later on, but I had a really great phone call last week. I received a call from a member of the community who has a gay grandson, and she's trying to find a church where she can take him. And she said they had gone to one congregation and the people there just wanted to change him. And she wanted to know how would he be received at St. John's. And I assured her that, you know, that was not going to happen there and that we would be very welcoming and really affirmed her for being so loving and protective of her grandson. And then I was relaying this story to some people in my congregation. We were on a walk and they told me that their whole family had gone to the Pride concert in Franklin and that they were going to a forum that afternoon. And so I told them the story about this grandmother. The man, the husband, kind of welled up with tears. He was so moved by that story that a grandmother would be so loving and protective. And I just thought, you know, this is the way it's supposed to be. this is love and care and compassion and understanding. And as I said, I really think my congregation's a little bit ahead of me.
Thank you. Thank you very much for that. And Rabbi Tom, I thought about how I would phrase this, but I have to think that you have stories to share with from your congregation, from the temple, that people of the Jewish faith have been the subjects of hatred and intolerance and oppression. And as a leader of the temple in our town of Franklin, how do you interact and guide and lead your congregation?
Thank you. I appreciate that, Pandora. Let me, first of all, just reflect on my two colleagues' comments that I think that first, Eric's right, and it's important to recognize the privilege that everybody has in their different places. We have, I have congregants who are Black and they have a special burden. I have congregants who are LGBTQ in all of its varieties, and they have special issues to deal with. And I appreciate Kathy naming them and putting them up front, especially during Pride Month. It's important to do that. So yeah, but everybody in my congregation is feeling very nervous right now with the increase in acts of anti-Semitism in recent times. It's, after the events in the Middle East, in Israel and Palestine, it's been really hard. They're the people, the diners at a Jewish restaurant in New York were sitting outside and somebody pulls in out of a car and comes up and starts beating up someone. A Jewish man comes out of a subway in New York. He's on a way to a demonstration, wasn't even there yet, didn't have any particular political things on. He was wearing a kippah, a yarmulke. He was beaten up. I know many people who, when they who regularly wear a yarmulke or a Star of David, and when they go to Europe, they take them off because they're not safe. And we're starting to worry that's like that, getting to be like that in the United States. The sense we're all used to this as Jews, it's part of what we go up, we deal with, it's part of our lives, but it's harder now. And so what I want to spend a little bit of time on is talking to everybody else who's on this, who's listening to us. And my plea to all of you is, I know that the vast majority of people listening are people of good hearts who want to do the right thing. So a little piece of advice about how to do the right thing. When the Black Lives Matter protests began, I was out there, not because I am African-American, because it was the right thing to do. And it recognized that particular form of oppression. And when people started saying, all lives matter, I recoiled, as many of us did, because, all lives matter. But right now, we're focusing on the fact that people don't recognize how much Black lives matter. It is the particular one form of oppression that needs to be lifted up at a particular time. It is not saying other things don't matter, but it's also not saying you don't raise them all up together. And so I'd say for people, if you're going to deal with, when there are hate crimes, particularly big against Asian American Pacific Islanders, the AAPI group, okay, well, raise those up and focus on them, and you don't have to necessarily bring in everything else. But somehow it seems that often when people say, I'm against anti-Semitism and Islamophobia, I'm against anti-Semitism and all forms of hate. No, I'll take your word for it, but that's not the time. The time right now is, I'm against anti-Semitism. When there's an uptick of any other form, then that's the time to talk about that. And we should. But it is recognizing that different types of prejudice manifest in very different ways and learning the history of those. Anti-Semitism, I'll give my 1 minute lecture on anti-Semitism, which is, it is for many people an odd form of a prejudice, because Jews, certainly in America, aren't doing all that badly, right? As a group, we're fairly well off. We're successful. We don't have people keeping us from going into hotels and restaurants as they once did, into colleges as they once did. We're past that. And so it says, well, clearly the Jews, they've passed it. They don't have any problems anymore. And yet this group, nonetheless, is attacked from political perspectives of left and right, because we do have some privileges. And they say, well, why should they? And I mean, yeah, but why shouldn't anybody else too? So it's odd being a group that has some power and yet is also victimized. And I don't think I think people have to learn the whole history of anti-Semitism and how to understand that. The Jews have often been placed in a difficult middle position that is not so easy to explain, but it all deserves thinking and study. People are different. Each story is different. Each story deserves its own level of care and its own level of thoughtfulness. And so that's really what I'm asking for people, is just be aware. And, you know, we all have our moments that we need a hug.
If I could just interject, and that's a big word for me, interject. I think it is so interesting to hear the three of you speak, both your personal experiences and your congregational experiences, if that's a congregational is the word, if not, it is today. But I think, like Reverend Kathy, some of the things she had talked about, her experiences in the last 36 years and dealing with the grandmother, I think from my point of view, that's something I understand, not because I lived that life, but you hear about those kind of things all the time. I was so engrossed in what Rabbi Tom was saying, because I think a lot of people, when they think anti-Semitism, people automatically, I don't know if everybody, I'll let myself, first thing you think about is the Holocaust and everything back then. You don't necessarily realize or know or think this is going on today. We know the hatred for the Black Lives Matters movement, the Pride movement, everything like that. But it's so interesting to hear Rabbi Tom, because I don't think that's, when you hear of all this hatred and bullying going on, that's something you don't think about that right away. You think about the other things. So Rabbi, I so appreciate you sharing that, and you articulated it tremendously. So thank you for that. And Pandora, my apologies for jumping in there.
No apologies, Jay. You always bring a voice and a lens of understanding to the conversation and help us to reflect on what everyone is saying. That was wonderful. And as I think about the comments among our faith leaders this morning, I wonder, where do you think, how is Franklin doing? How are we doing as a community broadly with spectrums, along the spectrum of intolerance and hate? How are we doing as a community? Are we being more outreaching? Are we more tolerant? Do we have areas of growth where we need to expand our knowledge and become better educated? And Reverend Kathy, we always find that not always, but we find most of the time that education is a good pathway to overcoming intolerance, because a lot of it finds its roots in lack of knowledge, lack of understanding. How do you think that Franklin is doing with regards to educating tolerance and welcoming and understanding?
Well, I related the story about the grandmother and the people from my congregation. And I would say, first of all, St. John's chose me. They called me as their priest 3 years ago. So that says a lot right there. And several members of the congregation suggested putting a rainbow on our sign as a statement of welcome. I was more hesitant about that because I didn't want to invite harassment, but we did it and there has been none. In terms of education, I want to be a better ally to Rabbi Tom in the temple, and I need to learn more about how to do that. And I don't think it's his responsibility to educate us, so I appreciate what he shared today. My congregation's done some study about racism and xenophobia, but perhaps we also need to learn about anti-Semitism and to speak out more about that. So I want to commit to doing that.
I like the way you phrased it, that it's our responsibility to learn. We're not looking for someone to teach us. We're looking to learn, and we'll go to those sources of information. That was a very interesting lens, and we have a wealth of knowledge out there. Reverend Eric, the Unitarian Universalist is a very welcoming congregation. I once have been in your building for many different services and have also experienced the labyrinth. And that was a wonderful reflective period of time shared there. How do you see your congregation working with the knowledge factor and...
Well, I want to appreciate Reverend Kathy and Rabbi Tom for pointing us in the right way here. And there's a lot of followership that that our congregation and that people in Franklin are called to and often are showing up to. And that's gratifying. You know, in the past week, there was a news story that once again placed our beloved town in the, you know, one of the safest cities in the country and probably in the world category. And, you know, it's wonderful to hear that. But I want to invite all of us to also wonder what that might hide. And that it's as much a reflection of the breadth of privilege in Franklin as anything else. So let's celebrate it. Let's continue to be a very, very safe community. But let's also have a deeper question about what might be, as you've said, Dr. Pandora, below the surface. You know, the congregation is trying to be on a path of learning, understanding, committing, witnessing. We took a step this past Sunday at our annual congregational meeting to make anti-racism work an article of faith. So Unitarian Universalists have 7 principles. This past Sunday, with many other UU congregations around the country, we adopted an 8th principle related to deconstructing oppressions as an article of faith for us. We're on the path in that work. I'm glad to say that we'll be celebrating Pride this coming Sunday. That's an annual event for our congregation, and looking forward to lifting up how the lives of LGBTQ+ people are a blessing, how trans people are divine, and that we'll be dedicating a restroom in the meeting house for people of all genders during the service, and feeling like that's one step forward for us. And lastly, I want to lift up that on the 20th of June, we have a very special celebration of international human rights. The executive director of our service committee will be our guest minister. And part of what we do on that Sunday is remember important work that was done during, just prior to and during the Second World War, to rescue refugees, particularly Jewish people in Europe. And the two Unitarians that were involved in that were the Sharps, only the second and third Americans recognized by Yad Vashem for being righteous among the nations. And we look back to them as an inspiration to how we need to be now. And I hope that that takes hold in the congregation and beyond.
Thank you very much. I think Rabbi Tom, Reverend Eric's story leads directly to your congregation. All that's going to be happening at his church on June the 20th and all that is going on in the temple. Do you want to speak to different activities, different education pathways that are happening, celebrations?
So many different things. First of all, I want to thank Reverend McAdams so much for her reaching out about and her, the statement she made about fighting anti-Semitism, and I appreciate that. Second, for Reverend Cherry, I do want to say, oh yes, I certainly know about the Sharps. I've seen a video presentation about them. I think it's a documentary that was done about them. It was just fascinating, and it's a very powerful and helpful story to be reminded, and thank you for doing that. At our temple, we are celebrating Pride at a Shabbat service on June 25th, and looking forward to sharing with the congregation and trying to build up that up. We're looking to get a speaker in. It's going to be a special service, as it always is. So we've got that coming up on that particular score. And just in general, in terms of what the community is, the larger community, I'd say, I think there's a lot of good work there. People in charge all over the place who are doing very powerful good work. And we as a Jewish community have felt incredibly well taken care of in Franklin, and we appreciate that, and I don't want anyone to think otherwise. But, you know, at the same time, there are people who do things. There are swastikas that get painted. There are jokes made about Jews. Every person, every youngster in our congregation a couple years ago, we had all our kids in, we had a conversation about anti-Semitism. Every one of them had experienced some form of anti-Semitic activity. Not the biggest thing in the world, but stuff. You know, so it's out there and it happens. That's, we aren't just Franklin. Our congregation represents several communities, but it's happened. It's happened in Franklin. And I know that, I'm with Reverend McAdams on the Franklin Freedom Team. We hear about, you know, stories at the high school for African-Americans, for Latino and Latinas. Heard so much about the Asian-Americans, but that generally is just because I haven't heard about it, as opposed to it's not happening. And so we all still have a gigantic amount of work to do from our positions, both of privilege and of non-privilege. In each place, there's work to do. And so I'm hoping that we will go from not just being the safest, one of the safest communities in the country, but being one of the most welcoming communities in the country. That would be a great step.
I like that, because I wondered about the data points that informed our selection as one of the safest communities, but to be the most welcoming, that would speak volumes. That would be wonderful. All of you have shared so much today, personally and on behalf of your congregations. Does anyone have a closing remark that they would like to share that hasn't?
You know what? I would like to ask our panel, our experts, what can, and you may not know, and it may be multi-stepped, what can people such as myself, Keith, Pandora, you know, you folks lead congregations, so you've got, pardon the pun, but you've got a pulpit to kind of speak from. You know, Pandora and I and Keith don't necessarily have that. You know, we could put up on our Facebook profile, put a pride flag instead of our picture for a month. But that just seems just way too little. I think so many people want to do things, but they're not sure what to do. At least that's the case for me. So I'd throw that out to everybody and anybody. Reverend Eric, you raised your hand first. Thank you.
Well, Jay, I've got one selfish request and then sort of a broader one, selfish on behalf of all of the religious communities in town, pushing your religious leaders and religious leaders in other communities to be out front, to center the importance of this work in being an ally to our Jewish neighbors in town, and to all our neighbors in town who suffer any variety of intolerance, hate, or other oppressions, is supporting and pushing religious leaders to do that is a fundamental step that all people can take. And so I'd urge you, again, somewhat selfishly, from my point of view, to try to do that. And the thirdly is a little less religious and more secular. And that's to show up, to not be a bystander when something that shouldn't be happening is taking place, and noting that on social media, noting how you have interrupted an act of intolerance, hate, or oppression on social media is very constructive. But even better is that it actually happened at the time when it needed to. So let's be near each other. It's getting safer to be near each other physically. Let's be near each other as allies and supporters to interrupt intolerance, hate, and oppression as it's taking place. We can all do better at that in our everyday secular lives.
yes to all of that. And I'd also add learn, learn, learn. You want to learn how to be an anti-racist? Read the book, How to Be an Anti-Racist, by Ibram Kendi. It has a lot of useful ways of changing your thinking so you are ready to act. You want to learn how to deal with anti-Semitism? Read Deborah Lipstadt's Anti-Semitism Here and Now, very readable book that tells you a lot about where anti-Semitism is today and gives you, you know, the more you know, the more you're able to step in, the more you're able to recognize things, because a lot of times comments and the like are made and you might not even know they're problematic, but the person who's saying them knows it, and the people who are getting that, who are receiving them, know it. So, you know, when you're a bystander, you need to know.
Wonderful. And I think that you repeated the key word three times: learn, 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 that we educate ourselves. If we don't know, we find out so that we can take the appropriate steps. And Reverend Eric, you said show up. And that's it. Oftentimes we hear of a gathering on the town common. They're, you know, supporting a group that has been suffering in some way, depending on the particular group, that we get in the car or walk on over and show up. And that means a lot. Any other comments?
I think this is, you know, I've got a page full of notes that I've just been taking. I didn't take a page full of notes in 4 years combined in college. So I think the information, tremendous, and the sharing, and I've learned a ton. But I also think we've done this show. It's a great show. It's a show that I think needed to be done. But I think we've only scratched the surface. I think, you know, we can look, you know, Keith, myself, and Pandora, we can talk with you guys about doing more in this realm, because it is such a problem. And maybe it is in Franklin, maybe less so, but all over the country and all over the world, and it needs to be addressed. And especially people that don't know how to address it need to learn from people that do, in my opinion.
Very good. Yes, they do. And I have to think you probably took at least 5 or 6 pages of notes over the 4 years.
I may have just used them as coasters in the pub. That would be the only reason to have them.
Jay, you mentioned, or someone mentioned, that we've been doing this show for a year. So I just wanted to say happy anniversary to everybody.
Yeah. Yeah. Our first show was June of last year, as I remember correctly. It feels like it's only been a couple of months in some respects. I think in other respects, it seems like we've grown very quickly with a comfort level in really talking about anything and everything. And that normally takes years, but that's a credit to the three of you, you know, being willing to share and allowing Pandora and myself and Keith into your worlds to maybe ask some questions. Speaking for myself, I just thank you for continuing. You could have bailed after the first episode once you got to know the three of us, but you didn't. You stuck with it. You put up with us. And it's been, so far, it's a great journey, but I feel like we're still in the driveway of this journey. We haven't even gotten out into the road yet. So, but I thank you for letting me be a part of it.
I thank you as well. And I think many of us have been involved in conversations with other groups and organizations as we tend to take these steps out of the pandemic. And that as we look back on the pandemic, there are some things that we want to bring with us into this quote new normal that we are hopefully all going to be experiencing. And this is one of them, this radio show, that we came together in these little squares. We, for those listening, we record using Zoom. So many of us have not met one another in person, but we know them as faces in the little squares. But the content, the thoughtfulness, the heartfelt sharing, the leadership that we receive from the three faith leaders has carried us over these months. And I really hope, and we're going to set the date for the next radio conversation, but it's one of those things that I'm glad to take from the pandemic and bring it ahead into the future. See what happens. It,
you know, as always, we end things with a thoughtful spiritual focus. Although I think today's show was almost that in an entirety, with kind of the way we were looking at and approaching getting direction from the three of you. But this month, Rabbi Tom is going to kind of lead us in our focus here at the end of our show. So, Rabbi?
Thank you. I want to share a teaching that's in the Talmud, one of the Jewish holy texts, or important texts. I don't know how to describe it. And it's in a discussion of the requirements for convicting someone of a capital crime. And it's stated that the requirements are substantially higher than convicting someone for a property damage. And the reason is because of the importance of each individual. And this produces some further discussion about people. And it asks, so how is God different from an earthly ruler? And the answer is that an earthly ruler will mint coinage with their likeness on it. Think of British coins that all have the likeness of the Queen. And those coins are all the same. God, too, has minted coins with God's likeness on it. But that likeness is the face of each individual person. So I would hope that as we go forward, we remember that as we look on each person, we see a spark of divinity, a sense of the holy in everyone that we are in contact with. And if we can remember that, I think that we will do substantially better at making this a world filled much more with love than with hate.
Amen.
That's perfect. What a great thought and sentiment to have us go forward. I have to thank all of you for today's show. As I said, I think it's something that a lot of people are almost fearful to discuss. And part of that is because people just don't know. They don't know what to say. They're afraid of saying the wrong thing. I think it's great that we've got a little forum here for us that, hey, I've been able to stick around for a year, so there's obviously no judgment and no criticism for saying silly and stupid things. I've made it through. So I have to thank you all for that. Pandora, any closing thoughts?
I apologize for that. my closing thoughts would be thank you to everyone on this discussion, that it was a very important subject, and I'm glad that we were able to raise it in this forum and share it with the Franklin community.
I think that's awesome. I again, back to our three panelists, they're the ones that give us direction. Pandora and I just read the email and work off that. So that this topic, this discussion, all came from our three panelists, and we're fortunate to have them with us. As Reverend Kathy said earlier, this is kind of our 1 year anniversary. We did our first show a year ago this month. So the good news is we'll be back for a second year, which is just, that's mind boggling to even say. But sometime soon, folks, you'll actually maybe get to see us in person. Maybe this will be a combination radio show, TV show, when we get in the studio and we actually watch a priest, a minister, and a rabbi walk in. So for Dr. Pandora Carlucci, for Reverend Eric, Reverend Kathy, Rabbi Tom, Keith Palmieri, and I saw Pete Fasciano in the background, I'm Jay Horrigan. Thank you so much for listening, and have a great day.